Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 30th. I'm Ray Graff. Home improvement projects are on the docket today, and we welcome back our expert, Darren Tracy, to help answer your questions about home repair and maintenance. To join today's discussion, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Darren is a licensed professional engineer and construction specialist, and he is here to help you. That number again is 800-348-2551. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, Home Improvement. Your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Oh, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You know, the weather's beautiful. And at this time of year, I like to break out the hammer and the saw and just destroy something on my house. Frankly, doing home improvement projects is not for everybody. It's certainly not for me. If you have one and you're working on a project and you have a question, and it's always good to get a little advice. And today we have an expert. Darren Tracy is here. He is a licensed professional engineer with extensive experience in construction, renovation, property management. He is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst, a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, which specializes in unique projects. And I saw a unique project of his on social media the other day, and we'll talk about it in a minute. Darren is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. Always great to have Darren Tracy on the show. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you for the warm welcome.
It is beautiful out.
It's we deserve it.
There are so many things I want to do in my house, and I am so bad at all of them that I have to call somebody. It's pathetic, really.
Well,
some people should not own homes, and I'm one of them.
Yeah, they require constant maintenance. They really do.
Yes, and you let them go, and then it gets worse. And not to depress everyone, but the number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Maybe you're a go-getter. Maybe you have a better attitude than I. Well, Darren Tracy is the guy to answer your questions. I saw a project that you had been working on, an old stone house or something or other. Saratoga?
It's a brick house.
That's right.
1870s vintage.
Yes.
And it was a former doctor's office. It goes by the name of Dr. Ferguson's office locally. It's listed on the National Register of Historic Places, and we've been working on it for quite some time.
And were you really concerned? Was this hyperbole that you were afraid the winter was going to take the thing down?
Oh, no, that's not hyperbole.
No?
The city of Glens Falls was going to tear the building down because of the lack of structural integrity. There were big holes in the roof, holes in the brick wall. It was really questionable if it would survive the winter. We were able to temporarily stabilize it, and with a little bit of luck, it did survive the winter.
So what's
next? It's a fun project. Well, we gutted it out. There was a lot of wood to repair, rotted wood. We're framing interior walls alongside the brick, and it's like a puzzle. It's not a new house is. You do this, 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 and this. This old house is not like that. It's like a puzzle, which is fun. It challenges you some, but it's also sometimes annoying.
Yeah.
And the pace of progress is slow. But I really like historic buildings. I think they're important to the community. They're part of the fabric of the community. They're a tie to the past. They're an opportunity for young families to get into housing inexpensively. I'm glad you brought this up because
I was fascinated by the picture.
I like to make the argument for keeping some of our housing stock instead of tearing it down or letting it deteriorate so much that it falls down, because there are opportunities there for young people to get into some housing inexpensively. If they provide some sweat equity, they have some skills. If they don't have the skills, they're willing to learn the skills.
Yeah.
So there are opportunities out there.
Well, as you repair and rebuild this historic building, what sort of, how do I put it? What criteria do you use in order to make it authentic? Or do you just say, I'll modernize all of this?
Well, we are taking advantage of a tax credit through New York State. And because it's listed on the National Register of Historic Properties, we can take advantage of that tax credit. A property has to be listed.
Right, but do you have to make sure it stays historic? Or
we do. There are certain guidelines that you have to follow in order to restore it to a certain authentic state. And sometimes that costs more money to do that. But this particular tax credit is worth 20%.
Yeah.
So if we spend $100 on the project, we get $20 back. So
yeah,
it makes a project worth doing. And that tax credit is available on commercial buildings through the federal government as well for another 20%.
Ah.
So you see some of these older buildings being rehabbed, old mills being turned into condos. One of the reasons that those projects happen and because of these tax credits, both state and federal. So it can be up to 40% off on the cost of the project.
Well, it's the beginning. Oh, go ahead.
If it's not listed on the National Register of Historic Places, you don't have to follow any particular guidelines. You want to weatherize it well, insulate it well, and preserve your investment. And you have a lot of options.
The progress, I assume, will be quite extensive over the now that the summer's just underway. Is there a way that we can follow this progress?
Oh, there is. Thanks for asking. I have a website, westbranchengineering.com, and on that website are some links. You can link to my Facebook page where I have blogs listed. I'm keeping a series of blogs about the progress of the project, and I'm up to blog 5 now.
Wow.
So that's a way that people can keep abreast of the project, and it's been well received.
Cool. Darren Tracy is our guest. Let's take a couple of calls here before the first break. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rob in Dutchess County. Rob, you're first.
Hey, thank you guys so much. Hey, how do I know when to fix my roof?
that's a pretty simple
one,
Rob.
It's old. It's probably about 20 years old, I'm guessing. But no leaks, looks good, but, you know, what are you going
to
do?
20 years. Time to fix the roof.
What is the membrane? Is it a metal roof, a standard asphalt shingle roof?
Say what?
What type of roofing material is it? Is it a metal roof or a standard conventional asphalt shingle roof? What type of roof, Rob?
I think it's asphalt. I was kidding. I believe it's asphalt, yeah.
Okay. Well, typically you can get 20 to 30 years.
Oh, really?
Out of those. So you could possibly have another 10 years out of that. Other than the obvious leak that you would see in your house, another telltale sign would be the shingles turning up. If they turn up badly, then it's time to start consider replacing the shingles.
Turning up at the edge a little bit.
That's correct. Again, the main telltale sign is a leak.
Yes.
Unless you're really OCD and overly concerned about preventative maintenance, I would wait until they really look deteriorated on the outside or you develop a leak.
Okay. Hey, Rob, good luck.
I got umbrellas for every member of the family just in case.
There you go. I like that.
Thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. Dave in Del Mar. Dave, you're on.
Hey, Darren. I too, love old buildings, and great to hear someone else is keeping them up. In fact, I'm renovating the kitchen in my house. It was built in 1901 in Del Mar. And the main beam that runs in the basement has a sag in it. And in a certain area we're looking at, it's about maybe 2 inches over maybe 10 feet. And I've talked to a couple different folks, no actual engineers, a couple kind of renovation people. And I've gotten a kind of a gamut of opinions from there's no way you'd ever renovate a kitchen without completely replacing it and taking it out or doing substantial work to have that fixed. Other people who looked at the kitchen and said, you know, last time this place was renovated back in the 70s, clearly, the people had accommodated it. You know, the tiles were cut on an angle to accommodate this. It probably hasn't sagged in 100 years. So I'm trying to make sense of the opinions that I'm getting. I'm okay with a slightly saggy floor. It's okay. But what are my options here?
I'm glad that you called. I'm here to help sort out different opinions from other people.
Good.
You could at least stabilize that beam, and you could stabilize it with what's called a steel lally column. You can buy those in your lumber yard. They're typically a 3-inch diameter steel column, and you would put that under the midspan of that beam, and below the lolly column you'd put a 4-inch solid concrete block to land the lolly column on, and it has a screw.
Yeah, that was one of the options we got, and someone told us that we had to cut a hole in the concrete, the poured concrete floor, because the thickness of the concrete floor would be insufficient to support that, and we should essentially pour a 2x2 footing under the basement floor. But another person said that was completely, you know, overkill. So again, trying to make sense of that.
Okay, that's a better design, but it may be overkill. Probably you would get away with just installing a 4-inch solid concrete block or two of them laid flat side by side, with a third on top of that. I say two side by side to spread out the surface area.
Yep.
And that's what a footing does by cutting out the floor and installing a poured footing. It increases the surface area. But you could effectively do this on the cheap by putting 2 4x8x16 solid concrete blocks flat on your existing concrete, and then put a third on top of that in the middle, and put the lolly column on top of that, and I think you would probably solve your problem. You could at least stiffen your floor, and you could even jack it up some if you wanted to.
Okay. I guess that, not to be on the phone too long, one last question then is a little bit of a sag. If we were going to pour like floor leveler, would that kind of change the dynamics of the floor and make me want to have to stiffen the joists, or is doing the main beam, obviously that's not going to affect the joists too much, but I mean, are we kind of getting into more trouble if we want to start, you know, pouring floor level and putting tile down, or should we go with something lighter, or is that kind of a case-by-case determination?
Okay, so when you refer to floor leveler, you're not talking in the basement, you're talking up in the kitchen now?
I'm talking, the floor that has taken the shape a little bit of that sagged main beam and where we're looking to put the tile down in the kitchen.
Okay. If it were my home, I would install that column as I described, and I would put some tension in that column and see how easily it returned to level or close to level. And then I'd install my floor leveler upstairs.
Okay.
You want a stiff floor regardless, and in order to get that stiff floor, you'd install the lolly column.
All right, Dave, we have to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest. It's Home Improvement Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number.
For WMC comes from the Albany Pine Bush Discovery Center, presenting Lupine Fest with crafts and food vendors, music, live wildlife programs, and guided tours this Saturday from 10 to 4, albanypinebush.org. Berkshire Country Day School, an independent pre-K to 9, comprehensive and challenging curriculum, warm, vibrant community, bus service from Hudson and Columbia County starting fall 2018. Intentional, independent, inspired, berkshirecountryday.org. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, breast augmentation, and laser and skin care since 1996. 518-786-1700. Hooked Seafood Company, Latham, fresh seafood retail market and kitchen with scratch-made lunch and dinner menu, raw bar, lobster rolls, whole belly clams, fish and chips available. HookedSeafoodINC.com. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Balton Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years. QFCC.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Darren Tracy is here to talk about your home maintenance and repair issues. And Darren, this one came in via email from Ian in Saugerties, who says, I need to replace the tread and riser boards on a very old staircase. The tread boards are slotted into a closed stringer and are accessible from the back in the closet, so the job should be pretty straightforward, parentheses, famous last words. The old boards seem to be 1-inch planking. My question is there a product available that is finished, stained, beveled, treated, and hard-wearing that I can purchase for my project, or do I need to purchase the wood and do the finishing myself?
You can purchase Southern Yellow Pine stair treads that have what's called a bullnose on the front leading edge of the step. So all the machining is done. Typically, they are unfinished, and you would have to finish them. But they make really nice stair treads, particularly with a rounded bullnose leading edge.
And then the follow-up, and I guess you just answered that, what is the best type of wood to use? Any tips to make the new treads hard-wearing?
Southern Yellow Pine is a pretty good wood to use because it's rather dense for softwood, and also it's relatively inexpensive.
That's good. You
can also buy oak stair treads, which are a hardwood and more dense and longer lasting, but they're more expensive.
Okay.
You can put a polyurethane varnish on the treads, whether it's oak or Southern Yellow Pine, and that helps protect the wood to a certain degree, and you can use an oil-based or a water-based finish. Oil-based is a little bit more resistant, but the water-based is really easy to use and low VOC.
And what's VOC?
Volatile organic compound.
Oh, okay. And you want lower on that?
In order to protect your health, you don't want to be breathing that stuff as it off gases.
Yeah.
Once you apply that material and becomes to a neutral state, I don't think it's much of an issue. When you apply it, you have to be careful of the gases. They can be toxic to you. This time of the year, it's not so bad where you can open your windows and install a fan.
Yeah.
But it does take a while to cure for these oil-based. It may take a week or two or three to off gas.
Okay.
But the water base will solidify in a matter of a couple of hours, and you don't have those VOCs to deal with.
Darren Tracy is our guest. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Charles in Middletown. Charles, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. A couple of questions for Mr. Tracy. They're kind of interrelated.
Okay.
First of all, how would I know, who would be able to reliably tell me if my roof is solid enough to carry solar panels?
The solar installer should be able to tell you that. Some solar installers have licensed professional engineers or architects who are savvy in engineering to tell you that. If not, they subcontract that to professional engineers such as myself. You could check with the local building department or other engineering organizations in your area.
Are solar panels fairly heavy?
They're not particularly heavy. They do change the load on your roof. Instead of displacing the snow load equally throughout the whole roof, they apply point loads, concentrated loads at different locations, which may be a factor. Typically, I find that panels will overall decrease the snow load on roofs because they tend to shed the snow off the roof. There's a lower coefficient of friction than what the roof shingle would have, so it tends to slide off.
Okay. Charles, I say we're getting some feedback. We're hearing ourselves in your line, so you can ask your follow-up.
There we go. Okay, let's try that.
All right.
Sorry. The other question is this is a question posed by a neighbor, and I couldn't think of any answer, and it bothers me, which is, if I put solar panels on the roof and I need a new roof, what happens then?
Ah, great question.
And what happens then is that you'll have to take those off, and it is a nuisance to take them off and reinstall them, but it's not the end of the world, and you will already have a lot of other work remaining, your conduits down to your basement, your tie-in, and you can reuse the existing struts when you put them back on. So it is more work, but it's not the end of the world. I'm facing that on my house. I put solar panels on about 10 years ago with a 10-year-old roof. Now I have a 20-year-old roof and approaching the lifespan of my shingles.
Yeah.
Going to have to replace them. One thing, interestingly, is that the panels have protected my shingles to a certain degree, at least
UV.
Below them, and extended the life.
Interesting.
So I'm putting that decision off as long as I possibly can, Charles. So
all right,
good luck
Charles.
With that.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Darren, I know you can't see this, but I love the pained look on Zach the engineer's face when there's a problem with one of the calls. He looks like he's about to explode. It's endlessly entertaining.
Okay.
Let's go over to line four. Michael in Poughkeepsie. Michael, you're on.
Yes, quick question. They now pressure treat wood with copper, and my question is, will that react with the metal nails and affect the integrity of any outdoor projects?
Okay, one second on that question, Michael. I thought you were going to say, Ray, that you liked the anguished expression on my face when somebody posed a particularly challenging question.
No, I've never known you to even be flustered at all by a caller. And let's see if Michael can do that. Michael, go ahead.
Okay, Michael. Regarding pressure treating with copper, they actually use less copper in the pressure treatment wood now than what they have in the past. I think it's CCA that they use now, copper chromate. Arsenic. I could be wrong on that. That might be the chemical or chemicals that they used previously. But that's what helps preserve the wood. Did I answer your question or not?
Okay. And the second question I have is I have old Grumman solar panels and it has stopped working, and I've confirmed it's not the thermistors, but it looks like the problem is the controller. Would you know of any way where I can replace the controller since it's such an old system?
By controller, you're probably referring to the inverter, and what I would do if I had that problem would be get a hold of the manufacturer and see what they have to say about the warranty on that product.
Unfortunately, this is the Grumman system that was built in the 70s. I can't even get the owner's manual warranty.
You probably have to replace it in the 70s. I mean, that's 48 years ago or 40-some years ago. That's a long service. One thing I'll say about panels now, when I installed my panels, there was a central inverter in my basement. And so that with that system, if any of your panels are shaded, it affects the productivity of all the rest of the panels on your roof.
I'm not clear. This is solar hot water heating panels, not solar hot water. Electric.
Okay, well, let me finish my comment on this, and then I'll go to solar hot water. Now they have many miniature inverters on each panel, so that if one panel is shaded, it doesn't affect the productivity or the output of the rest of the panels. Okay, so I misunderstood you. So this is a solar hot water heating system. Same comment. The controller is 40-some years old. I really can't help you, particularly if you can't get a hold of the manufacturer. My answer is becoming long, so what I would say is contact me after the program off air, and I can work with you that a little bit more. And my email is Darren@westbranchinc.com. And I do have a solar hot water heating system on my home, which is partially homemade. The system is homemade with some factory-made products, so I do have some expertise.
So you might have
that.
Some advice.
Yeah.
Okay, Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Regarding the roof replacement and the solar panels, I think if somebody could come up with a shingle that was, in fact, a solar cell.
Oh, they're out there.
Really? Oh, yeah. You do whole roof like that?
I don't know about the whole roof, but they're out there.
That's the thing to do.
They're expensive.
Okay. Well, money's no object when you have
money. Money is an object. No. Money's an object with everything, unfortunately. You take money out of the equation, life would be a lot simpler, wouldn't it?
Well, if you don't have any, then anything you want is within realm. Let's see. Let's go to Fred and Hurley. Fred, you're on.
How you doing? Thanks, Ray.
Sure.
Hi, Darren. I have a 1929 hand-hewn log house. The original part of the house is hand-hewn log, 1929. One of the corners had powder post damage when I came in here. And so I'm contemplating eliminating that corner of the house and creating another room, et cetera, hall. And I'm concerned about the overall structure and the support of the structure, framing out, is it, to take a corner out on a log home, I suppose it's manageable, correct? And reframe it, and while maintaining the original structure of the original structure of the house.
Okay.
Somehow you'd have to tie the replacement segment or portion of the log that you removed or the beam that you removed.
Oh, it's many logs. It's the corner. It's affected about four logs up from the floor.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a complete redo. And I'm concerned about, it's hard to find somebody who doesn't work outside of prefabricated kind of log kind of structures. And so I'm really scared about how to proceed.
Okay. Well, if it's an addition you're talking about, you wouldn't necessarily have to build it out of post and beam. If you wanted that type of, to continue that type of construction, you could. It sounds like you have a complicated problem. It's probably beyond the scope of this program. And
yeah.
Again, I'll say you can contact me off the air, and I give out free advice.
Yeah, I mean, I have a log specialist who's built log homes, and that's his. But he's retiring, and it's becoming difficult.
Yeah.
In order to find people who actually understand.
Right. Right. Well, that's always a problem. Losing the expertise of particular people, and I'm tangenting off to an idea about losing people, their skills to retirement. We should somehow preserve all the knowledge of people that are retiring, because often people retire and all those years of experience just sit there and go and use. There should be some sort of format like the format for getting an automobile ride, Lyft, or that type of format where you can utilize people's experience. Oh, I need experience, someone who has experience with logs such as Fred or other particular anything that you can think of.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of machinists, some of the machinists over at General Electric, the guys that have retired in the past, so skilled, and now there are automatic machining tools that make the products, but there's always a need for the special skill, and it goes away. So it would be really nice to tie in all this experience that tends to fade away and go unused. That's a tangent.
No, I like it. Well, what we'll do is we'll save everyone's head. We'll freeze it like Walt Disney. And then when we can figure out how to tap that knowledge, we'll be all set. But the robots will be taking over by then.
Yeah, but they can't take over completely. And maybe they can at some point.
Okay.
Here's another tangent. When I was riding down here today on my motorcycle, which, taking advantage of this nice day,
right.
I have these conversations with myself when I'm riding it down about what I'm going to talk about. And they're just these beautiful conversations back and forth, and but they never really come to fruition.
That's because I ruined them all.
No,
that's true. Yes,
you do a great job, as I've complimented you on and off the air. But anyways,
and that's cool.
We
man.
Digress. I digress.
All right, so you ready to take another call?
I am.
All right, because otherwise I'll order out for some whiskey and we'll continue, continue this conversation. Let's go to John in Slingerlands. John, you're on.
Hello, I have a family room that was the original garage in the house in 1935. So it had a concrete floor, and put over that floor was like a framework of 2x4s with the radiant heat tubing snaked through there, and then plywood on top of that, and then wall-to-wall carpeting on top of that. Now that was about 15 years ago. Now my floor in some spots is squeaky and a little loose, and I'm wondering what's the best way to investigate that without tearing up the carpet, or if that's the only option.
Yeah, there's not really a good way. If it was built in 1935, it probably does not have a vapor barrier underneath the concrete. And if you're a frequent listener to this program, you often hear me refer to a vapor barrier underneath a concrete slab is very important. Otherwise, moisture just keeps wicking up through the concrete like a sponge.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening in your case, and probably getting some deterioration in the wood, John. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news on that. you have to do some tearing up and investigate that problem. And if you do tear it all up, you could put a vapor barrier back down on top of the concrete, and then put pressure treated wood on top of that and rebuild your system.
Okay, thank you for the advice.
You're welcome.
He doesn't sound too happy. All right, sorry, John. Our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today. We talk home maintenance and repair. Let's go to Joe in Belchertown. Joe.
Hey, how you doing? I have a crack in my block wall foundation. Now, I've lived in the house for 30 years, and I was familiar with the house 20 years before that, and it hasn't moved. But I want to sell the house. Do I touch this thing or just, I don't know.
Let me guess. I would guess that it's a horizontal crack. Is it a horizontal crack? Or
it is horizontal. It goes about 18 feet, and it's about 2 inches.
Oh, the crack is 2 inches? That's a
fissure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a problem with concrete block foundations that are not reinforced with grout and steel. It'll probably come up on the home inspection of anybody that buys the home. I've done a number of these reports for people that are either buying or selling a home, and
is that something that would prevent the house from being sold under a loan?
Yes, because typically when a home is sold, somebody that's buying the home will hire a home inspector, and they will point that out, and that can become a stumbling block. Yeah, it can. Again, if you want to, off the air, send me a photo. I can give you some advice off the air.
And that's nice.
There are different solutions to that problem. Yep. Unfortunately, none of them inexpensive.
All right, so what is your email address again, Darren? We're almost ready for a break here.
Okay, it's darren@westbranchinc.com. That's D-A-R-R-E-N at the direction west. Branch of a river, inc.com. I also have a website, westbranchengineering.com and westbranchinc.com.
Very nice of you to provide information to people. I mean, it could take up your whole day giving free information.
I usually get a few calls after the program, and I don't mind. I mean, it's a public service, I don't mind doing that.
You're a saint, Darren Tracy. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. Studio KTM Salon, Red Hook, specializing in all phases of cut and organic color from corrective to fashion by stylist Kristen Marquette, StudioKTM.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art, VisionExcelEyeCare.com. And the University at Albany Theater Program, working to train the next generation of performers, designers, technicians, playwrights, and stage managers, albany.edu/theater.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Chuck DeLoy on the guitar. Yes.
Wichita lineman.
Indeed. It's 2:41. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Vox Pop, Ray Graff here with Darren Tracy. And the number is 800-348-2551. And a couple of emails here. This one came in from Bernie. I'm wondering about painting aluminum siding. First of all, can you paint it? How long does it last? And what is generally the cost of painting versus getting new siding? And that's from Bernie in Burnt Hills.
Bernie, yes, you can paint aluminum siding. There's some prep work involved, but it's not that extensive. I would talk to a paint supplier to get some ideas from them. Pressure washing, maybe a phosphate soap, and use a latex paint. And regarding the expense, it would be less expensive than vinyl siding. Painting house like that, you know, might run you $1 a square foot. These are just general numbers. $1 a square foot in siding might run you $2 or $3 a square foot.
Okay.
So.
Very good. This one came in from Laura. We have a new addition that is framed and wired. The problem with the wiring, Romex, is that it smells horrible. Despite the fact that it has been in place since last fall, the odor is still so strong that it burns my throat. The question, when the room is insulated and sheetrocked, will it block the overwhelming smell?
It should block any smell like that that's in the wall, and that's a little bit surprising. I haven't experienced Romex smelling for any period of time. I suppose you put your nose up to it, and you can pick up that vinyl smell, but maybe you just have an extra sensory olfactory apparatus.
All right. And this one is from Robert in the town of Wright. Please speak to the toxicity and longevity of the new yellow wood versus the old CCA pressure-treated wood.
The new yellow wood. I do not know what that is.
Yellow, it says. Yellah-wood.
Oh, that's probably some South American wood. There are various species of wood that are naturally resistant to rot and decay.
Yeah.
It's a more locally known species would be cedar, northern white cedar, and then also from the West Coast, western red cedar. They probably perform better than pressure-treated wood,
okay,
but they're more expensive. And that's just a general statement. I know that cedar generally will perform better than pressure-treated wood, but there are other factors such as exposure to sun and how much moisture and so on.
All right. Well, Carol Lapani, our call screener, which of these people have been waiting longest? Our computer is out here on the line. One has been waiting longest. All right. Let's go to Peter in Cherry Valley. Peter, you're on.
Hey, great. Nice to talk to you. First time caller.
Oh, nice to have you here.
My sisters own an iconic building. It's a business that is on the National and New York State Historic Register. It's called the Teepee in Cherry Valley on Route 20. It's a 50-foot galvanized tin over a 2x6 frame, and it's shaped like an upside-down ice cream cone. My question for you, Darren, is that over the 20 years that my sisters own it, we've had to paint it like every 3 to 4 years because the paint keeps chipping. Is there any way we, or there's a primer or an etching that we have to do on the galvanized tin so that the paint can stick to it? Because the building breathes so much and expands with the heat and cold that the paint can't stick to it.
Okay. Typically, galvanized product needs to be primed before it's painted because there's a film on it, and the paint that you apply won't stick. But that film wears off if you let it sit out in the environment naturally for about a year. So you wouldn't need to prime it. In your case, it keeps peeling off. It seems like the previous layer that you have installed keeps peeling off, and the one before that keeps peeling off. I would try an aluminumized coating, a paint coating, that's often used on mobile home roofs. That holds up really well on metal roofs. My wife and I own a building that has these metal shingles on the roof, and they're over 100 years old.
You don't want to mess with them.
We paint them about every 10 years with this aluminized paint, and they hold up really well.
Fantastic.
So, now, does that aluminized paint come in different colors?
It may. I'm familiar with the aluminum color. It's thick, and it may have an asphalt base in it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you
check
add
with
color?
Check with your paint supplier. I would expect you could add color. I think one of the beauties of the aluminum is that it reflects some of the sunlight, and therefore your roof temperature is lower than, say, with a darker color. So that might contribute to the longevity.
All right, Peter, thanks for the call. Let's go over to Paul. We had Peter, now we have Paul, and Paul is in Albany. Paul, you're on.
Hi, Darren. This is Paul, a.k.a. PC. Good to talk to you for the first time in this format. I have a question. You might not be able to answer because I'm calling for a friend who's at work and can't listen to the program. They just bought a house, and they want to know how deep to dig to make a space for rocks around the house to aid with drainage. That sounds kind of general, but I've seen the house once, and it's more or less level around it. It's a very small front yard. The backyard quickly drops down a fairly steep slope into a creek, so seems like it would be fairly easy. But anyway, how deep to dig to put rocks, you know, ringing the house, I guess, to aid drainage?
Hi, PC. It doesn't need to be that deep. I guess I would excavate down about 6 inches. I would dig down about 6 inches at one end, and then deeper at the farthest end of the building, so that you have a gradual pitch. And then I would put down a layer of black 6 mil polyethylene, a foot or two wide. The wider, the better. And then put pea stone or stones on top of that. You could also put some corrugated black drainage pipe, 4-inch ADS pipe. If you're down 6 inches and that pipe's 4-inch diameter, you could have 2 inches of stone on top of that, and you could pitch that away from the building if your grade was such that you could do that, and that would help shed water away from the foundation.
Cool. Let me see if I got this. 6 inches at one end and deeper than that at the other end. And
right.
The
pitch it.
Of,
pitch it.
What was the name of that plastic?
It's 6 mil. That's the thickness of it. 6 thousandths of an inch, and that's you can buy that in a hardware store. It's thicker than four mil or 2 mil. It's, it's pretty tough, and it's black polyethylene. And you just put that down as an impermeable barrier so that water from the roof doesn't run down below that.
Yeah,
and it gives the stone and whatever drainage assembly that you have an opportunity to shed water away. When I said 6 inches, you can go deeper, but you want to pitch that grade an eighth of an inch per lineal foot minimum from one end to the next. So, you know, if your house is 30 feet long and you're pitching it a quarter inch per foot, you've got 30 quarters.
All right.
If you do your math on that.
Well, good luck, PC, and I hope your friend's house is lovely and it works out well. Let's go over to Christian in Spencertown. Christian.
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
Two roof-related questions.
Okay.
The first is I have about 80 linear feet of copper drip edge on a roof, and I want to put a gutter system, and I'm worried that if I put a galvanized gutter that I might get a galvanic reaction between them with icicles. Is that overthinking? Does it have to be a copper gutter system?
It's not overthinking. There is a dielectric reaction between those two metals. So you could put a barrier between those two. You could use a strip of black polyethylene to separate those metals. I'm not sure that the gutter would actually come in contact with the drip edge necessarily.
I'm worried about icicles that would transfer, that would create a bridge during the winter.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about a galvanic reaction icicle.
Explain, what are we talking about here?
Well, two dissimilar metals.
Well, in other words, two metals, a copper and a ferrous metal, when they come in contact, they can create a galvanic reaction and accelerate rust.
Ah,
so what I'm asking is if icicles bringing the two in contact
splendid.
During the winter months will accelerate that.
Okay.
I don't think so. It may, theoretically, but the temperatures are cold. I don't think you get that transfer of the electrons. Basically, it's electron transfer, and you have that separation. I don't think that would be a problem. And thank you for that explanation on the galvanic reaction, because you said it better than what I could have.
Okay, thanks. So question two is on a modular house with a 712 roof on trusses on 16-inch centers. I have a half-inch OSB deck. I'm about to replace the shingles, and the OSB, the half-inch, makes me nervous. Is it too much weight to add a half-inch layer of zip panel over that? Do you think that's
depends on I would say no. You know, as a general blanket answer, no. The added weight would be outweighed by the benefit of the stronger roof. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Let's go to Jim in Rensselaer. Jim, you're on.
Hi. I'm thinking of replacing a 1970s gas-fired hot water boiler. Gas comes from National Grid. I have the vent hose up through the chimney. The vent pipe itself is about 12, 14 inches in diameter. They said when they replaced it, the vent pipe would be 3-4 inches in diameter, and they would not need to put the vent all the way up through the chimney. They could just vent it into the chimney. From down where the boiler is, the chimney is clay tile lined with mortar in between, and I'm concerned with the moisture, since there's no pilot flame involved. Is this going to cause the mortar to disintegrate?
Right. I don't think that's a good idea to dump that in your flue. I really don't. You may want to consider a high-efficiency unit that vents out the side of your building, and then you could do away with that flue altogether, because those are tend to be inefficient and create a stack effect in the building.
Stack effect?
Yeah, stack effect is where warmer exits the top of the building and cold air enters down around the sill plates, and you have that going on throughout the winter, and you get drafts and energy loss due to that, and it's significant.
Okay.
And the chimneys really contribute to that stack effect. If you could eliminate that, it might help your energy efficiency. And if you're replacing a boiler anyways, you might want to go with a high energy efficiency boiler, and those exit right through your sill wall. And they do a good job.
I think one turns around 90%, you can exit through the sill wall, but I'll check it out.
Okay.
Right.
Well, thanks, Jim. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Bob in lovely Danbury, Connecticut. Bob, you're on.
Good afternoon. I have a 30-year-old house, and the roof was changed 10 years ago. At that time, I went up into the attic, and I noticed one of my 4x8 sheets was black. And I told the builder, you know, if you have to change it, you know, do it, you know. But I guess whatever reason, he didn't. What do I do to remedy that? Do I just paint over it to seal it in?
No, that's putting a Band-Aid on a problem, but not solving the problem. The reason you have that mildew or maybe mold, whatever it is, that's caused by condensation. And you get condensation because you don't have good ventilation in your attic. You need the appropriate amount of soffit ventilation and ridge ventilation and or gable ventilation. Because what happens, warm air goes up through your upper level ceiling, and then it hits the attic space and starts to cool. And as it cools, cool air cannot hold as much moisture as warm air, so it condenses out, just like it rains outside. It rains because that particular amount of air, that warm air, cools off and can't hold that water anymore, so it condenses out. So it condenses out on the on that surface, which is your roof decking, the bottom side of your roof decking. So in order to solve that problem,
I noticed that when the insulation is always into the corner.
Yeah,
I have ventilation holes in the corners. But it appears to be covered with the insulation. So what,
right,
I just
that's
pull
a
the
problem.
Insulation back?
That's right. You pull it back, and there are products out there that you can install called proper vents that help separate the insulation from the soffit area.
Mm.
And
those
are inexpensive and effective. So I would try those.
All right, Bob, thank you for the call. Why do you have an old piece of wire here, Darren?
Okay, it's interesting. Often I'll start out a show talking about safety.
Yeah.
I didn't today. I was going to discuss electrical safety. This is a piece of wire that I found in a junction box. A circuit breaker was tripping, and I was investigating the problem.
Solid
and
core, looks yeah. like a solid core copper.
Yeah, it's copper Romex,
yeah.
the wire that the woman had called about.
Yeah.
And because it was a loose connection, it heated up. And it started to melt that copper
yeah,
in the copper
that.
Insulation,
yeah.
and the breaker did its job and tripped. But yeah. it kept tripping, so I had to find out what the problem was. And because there wasn't a tight connection, it created this fire hazard. But
thank you.
If you have your properly sized breakers for the right size wire, you can prevent fire. So.
Well, I thank you for terrifying me right at the end of the program, Darren Tracy. Always a pleasure. Support comes from Lakeview Orchard Farm Stand and Bakery at 94 Old Cheshire Road in Lanesboro, offering seasonal tree fruits and berries, honey, pies, pastries, cider, donuts, Polish specialties, including galumpki, pierogies, lakevieworchard.com. Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst-Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts, conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998, WindyHollowVet.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Thanks again to Darren Tracy for being here today. Thank you for the great calls and just for plain listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, and Carol Lapani for answering the phones. Tomorrow, oh boy, it's an abbreviated Vox Pop. We have a debate for New York's 19th Congressional District. And then we'll have a half-hour Vox Pop. Stand by for news.